and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, May 28, 2024. A lawmaker from South Sudan's Eastern Equatorial State is asking the Transitional Government of National Unity to deploy security forces across roads in the state.
It appears that the unidentified gunmen roaming in the bushes of South Sudan become superior than our security sector. So my appeal as somebody representing those people, that we in the coalition government need to see the issue of Chapter 2 very, very critical.
And students in Malakal say the state's university should be relocated back to the town.
The problem due to the financial difficulty.
The problem is financial difficulty. Expensive flight to Juba, accommodation and also transport.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Three people attacked by gunmen over the weekend in Lafon and Mogiri counties of Eastern Equatoria State in Central Equatoria are being treated at Juba Teaching Hospital for serious gunshot injuries. Lafon County authorities say they have beefed up security on the road to save more lives. Kaltuma Vanessa reports for VOA from Eastern Equatoria State capital, Torit.
Omotong James Omule, acting executive director of Lafon County, says many people use the road through Lafon to reach Mogiri, which is risky as there is no security along the road. Omule says it's not the first time people were attacked on the road.
It is rampant, yeah, every time, just because this is our way, and there, this is the whereby maybe those of Mugiri and Mule are do crossing from the other side. And also, our incident, the history of South Sudan, Mule and Dinga, and this is where maybe those people are coming for a shackle. It's not known because all people are busy in the other side of Lafon area.
Omule says one of the men who escaped into the bush during the weekend attack was found this morning. He says authorities have yet to launch an investigation into the incident.
The road to Mugiri is not well, it is muddy, and the government are not bothering to also to come and even to check on there, unless when these people, the casualties, that all when there is, they reported to the government, and at the same time, they will not feel to come and ready to come for investigation.
Visa Likali Olum, a member of parliament representing Lafon County in the state, says the identity of the attackers is not known due to the inaccessibility of the spot where the attack occurred.
It happened that in the area that incident happened, there are some cattle traders who also went via Lafon to other areas in Eastern Equatoria to buy cows for sale. So the same people, their cattle were also raided in that same location. A little bit now confusing whether the people whose their cattle were raided or the people who have raided the cattle are behind this incident.
The county commissioner of Kapweta in Eastern Equatoria State suspended operation of non-profit operating in the area in February due to insecurity. 11,000 people were displaced from Buno village after two communities in the area clashed in February. Olum is calling on the national government to deploy security forces across Eastern Equatoria State.
It appears that the unidentified gunmen roaming in the bushes of South Sudan become superior than our security sector. So my appeal as somebody representing those people, that we in the coalition government need to see the issue of Chapter 2 very, very critical, and we implement it, and we really put our security properly, so that our citizens will have that full trust of the government when their security is guaranteed.
Olum says a string of child abduction, killings and rape are all too common along the Lafon and Mugiri Road in Eastern Equatoria State. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa reporting from Torit, Eastern Equatoria State.
From Torit, we move to Malakal, where South Sudan government is planning to relocate University of Upper Nile main campus to the town. The university was moved to Juba following the country's 2013 conflict, but many students who could not make it to Juba have spent over 5 years without attending classes. Mamera Abraham Kwart reports for VOA from Malakal town.
Students who completed high school in Malakal have not been able to attend university because of the area's insecurity. The University of Upper Nile State relocated to Juba after conflict engulfed Malakal in 2013. There were completed secondary school in 2018. He says most of the students who completed high school then are still waiting for a chance to enter university. He says without an education, some turn desperate.
Some of the people have not been good. Some have become criminals. Some have gone to drinking alcohol. And some people are okay. They are still waiting. They still hope for the university to open.
Chol Mading Chol, who completed high school in 2019, now teaches at a primary school in Malakal. He says he is not able to complete his university studies because of financial hurdles.
The problem due to the financial difficulty?
The problem is financial difficulty. Expensive flight to Juba, accommodation and also transport will be my problem. We hope that maybe the government should relocate the university to Malakal and then we join it here.
Another student who completed high school 4 years ago says there are few ways most people can afford university. Wienangui says the chances of securing government scholarships are slim in Upper Nile State.
We have something called corruption. In Juba, you cannot even have a scholarship unless if you have someone who is in the ministry. What I can suggest is that let them open Upper Nile University. If someone has little money every month, he or she can join. But in Juba, it is very hard. When you don't have any house or a relative house, you can suffer.
The Vice Chancellor of the University of Upper Nile, Professor Mamour Chualtruk, says the number of students attending classes at Upper Nile University in Juba has grown. He says he knows there are students who completed high school in Malakal and need help.
I urge
the Minister for Higher Education for his priority to be what he can do for the University of Upper Nile. Upper Nile needs University of Upper Nile sooner than later. We have our sons who completed Sudanese certificate, but they cannot manage to go to Juba because they do not know anyone there. And life in Juba is not like in Malakal. If the university was opened for development, then it should return so that it helps in development.
South Sudan has 12 universities. 7 are public, while 5 are private universities. For VOA News, I am Amer Abraham Kwart, reporting from Malakal, Upper Nile State.
From Malakal, we go to El Fasher in Sudan, where the United Nations agencies warn the humanitarian situation for an estimated 800,000 people in the Sudanese city of El Fasher and surrounding areas is rapidly worsening as fighting escalates between the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Since clashes between Sudan's warring parties erupted 2 weeks ago near the city of El Fasher, the United Nations reports an estimated 85 civilians have been killed and at least 700 wounded. The International Organization for Migration says more than 1,250 people have been displaced this week alone from the city in Darfur, but also says that likely is an undercount. The UN Refugee Agency reports around 600 people a day are fleeing Darfur for safety across the border into Chad's Adre region. UNHCR spokesman William Spindler says it is likely many more would flee if they could, if not for the challenges to seeking refuge in Chad.
they are not able to do that because of the fighting or because they are being prevented by armed actors to travel. We also have received very worrying reports that some people who intended to either go to El Fasher from the surrounding countryside or cross into Chad have been killed.
Spindler says the situation in Chad, which is the epicenter of the Sudanese refugee crisis, is very worrying as well. He says Chad, an impoverished country, is overwhelmed by the burgeoning refugee population as it copes with more than 600,000 Sudanese refugees. In the past month, the UN says nearly 19,000 new arrivals have registered in Chad. At the same time, he says the UNHCR and other UN agencies are severely underfunded and unable to provide the refugees with the humanitarian support they need. He says conditions in refugee camps in the country are deteriorating, especially in Adre, just across the Sudan border.
The camps there are severely congested, and that's why UNHCR has identified a new site in Dugui where we would like to evacuate or to transfer these refugees who are in Adre, very close also to the border, to this new site where conditions are better and where it will be easier for us to provide assistance to them.
Spindler says the UNHCR and his partners are racing against time to open the new site before the rainy season, which has just begun, makes roads impassable. He says people must be moved as soon as possible to the camp where they will be safe and it will be easier to provide the aid they need. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, many women and girls struggle to get sanitary pads across some parts of Africa. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Cameroon is observing World Menstrual Hygiene Day by sensitizing schools and public spaces to reduce civilians against to educate civilians rather against social taboos and gender stereotypes that women should not be seen in public during their menstrual periods. Non-governmental organizations are also donating menstrual kits to poor girls fleeing social and political tensions across the Central African state. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
Scores of youths, a majority of them girls, are told that menstruation is a natural part of the reproductive cycle. Officials in Cameroon's social affairs and health ministries say the monthly flows are not a curse, and girls and women should never be isolated from markets, schools, churches, and other public places because of their menstrual cycle. The government of the Central African State says it invited boys to menstrual health day activities because boys often mock girls in schools when they see blood dripping on their legs or skirts. Tabe Edwan is the spokesperson of Haven of Rebirth Cameroon, an association that takes care of victims of sexual and gender-based violence. She says she participates in activities to mark World Menstrual Health Day to battle taboos about menstruation that persist in Cameroon.
We are looking at instances of stigmatization such as prohibition from cooking, prohibition from attending religious ceremonies or visiting such spaces. Most often a young girl who is having her menstrual flow is considered to be unclean. And so anything that she touches becomes unclean or it also becomes contaminated.
Cameroon's government says World Menstrual Day activities took place in many towns and villages, especially in the northwest and southwest regions, where a separatist conflict, now in its seventh year, has displaced about 750,000 people. The country's social affairs ministry says displaced women and girls have lost nearly everything and lack even the $2 needed to buy sanitary pads each time they are on their monthly cycle. Mirabel Sonke is founder of the Network of Solidarity, Hope and Empowerment, a founding member of the International Menstrual Hygiene Coalition. Sonke says she is disheartened when women and girls use rags, papers and tree leaves or just anything unhealthy to stop blood flow because they cannot afford sanitary pads.
We usually give about 1,000 dignity kits, which include buckets, soap, pants, and a reusable, washable menstrual pad. We're still advocating for pads to be free. Our mission is to have an environment where pads will be accessible. That's why we are opening pad banks now, where vulnerable women and girls can go there and have pads.
Sonke pleaded with donors to provide sanitary pads to give to several thousand northern Cameroonian girls and women displaced by Boko Haram terrorism. Cameroon's government says 70% of menstruating women and girls lack access to regular basic sanitation products, but it has not reacted to pleas from NGOs to distribute sanitary pads free of charge. The Central African States officials say families and communities should help put an end to stigmas by openly discussing menstrual flow and letting everyone know that menstruation is a normal and natural biological function. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
From Cameroon, we move to South Africa, where 27 million people are registered to vote tomorrow in an election expected to be the tightest since the country became a democracy in 1994. Polls forecast the governing African National Congress, the ANC, could fall below 50% for the first time in 30 years, forcing it into a coalition government. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
The African National Congress has campaigned heavily in rural areas in the run-up to the election, concentrating on its traditional support base. Many political experts doubt this will be enough for the former liberation movement to get the votes it needs to form a majority government for the seventh time. Even ANC insiders tell VOA the party's many failures over the past decade mean millions of South Africans have lost faith in the organization, admired globally for its heroic fight against apartheid. ANC officials have allegedly looted state-owned enterprises of billions of dollars. The party's economic policies have not created jobs, with an estimated 13 million employable people jobless. Almost half the population of 62 million lives in poverty, surviving on meager social grants, and crime is rampant. Yet the ANC insists it's going to easily win more than 50% of the vote on Wednesday.
It's on!
On Saturday, it held an election rally at a Soweto stadium. Thousands of supporters cheered. President Cyril Ramaphosa asked citizens to give the ANC another chance to fulfill Nelson Mandela's dream of prosperity for all South Africans.
We are also going to spend quite a lot of money billions training people to get skills that can be best used in our economy. Our objective is to create quality jobs. We want to build industries. We want to localize so that more and more products are made here in South Africa. As our economy grows, we will be able to have the capacity to provide more and more support and assistance to our people.
Political analyst Professor Lesiba Tefo says ANC leaders in private are panicking ahead of the vote.
There are many scholars, including academics and politicians, especially those who belong to the ruling party, who have come out to say the dream has been deferred. We have betrayed the expectations of our people. Where did it go wrong? They are the ones who are telling me. They are at each other's throat.
Former opposition leader Tony Leon is convinced the ANC will either be ousted or will have to form coalitions in four of South Africa's nine provinces. This includes the heart of the country's economy, Gauteng, home to the big cities of Johannesburg and Pretoria. The party Leon once led, the Democratic Alliance, or DA, already governs the Western Cape region, including the city of Cape Town.
I'm of the view that the ANC will not get 50%, but how low they go, how high they go in the 40s, will determine a lot of other things. If they get in the high 40s, it'll be status quo, and so they will form the next government. They'll get a few smaller parties to join them, and it'll pretty much be business as usual. They get in the low 40s, or even mid-40s, it's going to be very hard for them to form a government except by calling in a bigger coalition partner, and then the crossroads choices rise, which way they go, populist EFF or more centrist DA, and what's going to be the response from those parties.
The Economic Freedom Fighters, the EFF, says it'll partner with the ANC if the ruling party implements its radical policies. These include state control of banks and mines and expropriating private land to redistribute to the poor. Some analysts say these demands might persuade the ANC to join with a more pragmatic DA. DA leader John Steenhuisen told reporters in Johannesburg recently he's willing to consider a partnership with the ANC.
It might be the least worst option to prevent the radicals in government from taking over, and that we would be willing to look at a variety of options then in order to achieve a result that we believe would be beneficial for South Africa's future. I can't say to you an ANC-DA government's going to happen. I can't say to you it's going to be stable because I just don't know. I don't know what the ANC is going to look like after the election. I don't know whether they're going to become more radicalized as a result of the election or not.
Analysts say no matter what happens on Wednesday, the election will be the most definitive sign yet of the decline of the ANC. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
While in the United States, U.S. presidential candidates Joe Biden and Donald Trump are both campaigning for the support of black voters. VOA correspondent Scott Stans looks at how the presidential campaigns are targeting African Americans.
Donald Trump told voters in New York that all Americans will benefit if he's elected.
It doesn't matter whether you're black or brown or white or whatever the hell color you are, it doesn't matter. We are all Americans and we're going to pull together as Americans.
Joe Biden told civil rights leaders in Michigan that all Americans are represented in his cabinet.
We have more African Americans. We have more women. We have more minorities in our administration than any other administration in all of history. That's why we're doing so damn well.
Trump and Biden are both campaigning for the support of black voters in an election where that may make the difference in swing states that could decide the outcome. Pew Research data shows the top electoral issues for black Americans in 2024 are improving education and strengthening the economy. Trump says he'll tackle both.
We're going to bring success back to our schools. We're going to bring prosperity back to every neighborhood and every borough of the greatest city in our land.
The Biden campaign's targeting black voters with this ad about Trump in New York.
Of course I hate these people.
Donald Trump disrespecting black folk is nothing new. He was sued for refusing to rent his apartments to black families and called for the execution of five innocent black and brown teenagers.
Biden says Trump is a vengeful candidate whose election would hurt minorities.
Trump isn't running to lead America. He's running for revenge. But revenge is no way to lead a country. You can't build a future on revenge. You can't build better lives through revenge. That's why I'm running to lead America into the future.
Immigration is a central theme in Trump's campaign, one he tailored to minority voters in the South Bronx.
African Americans are getting slaughtered. Hispanic Americans are getting slaughtered. And these millions and millions of people that are coming into our country, the biggest impact and the biggest negative impact is against our black population and our Hispanic population, who are losing their jobs, losing their housing, losing everything they can lose.
Biden told black voters he needs them again to beat Trump.
You're the reason Donald Trump is the defeated former president. And you're the reason Donald Trump's going to be a loser again.
4 years ago, black voters chose Biden over Trump by 92%. As of last month, Pew Research data says that's down to 77% of black voters who would vote for or are leaning toward Biden, compared to 18% for Trump. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what would you most likely to accomplish in life, and how close are you to achieving it?
My dream is to be one of the best filmmakers in Uganda and maybe in the world at large. With time and what I've done so far to achieve that, yes, I know I'm still very far, but I've written some scripts already.
To me, as a software developer, I still have a long way, but hopefully, God, I'll be able to make it.
I want to be a voice for the people who I need and help people generally wherever I find myself. And I think that studying to become a lawyer is in the right direction to achieving that.
I would like to be a very, very great musician, a composer. For now, I'm not close there, but I'm working to get to the level I can actually achieve that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday, May 28, 2024. We now take you to Western Equatorial State with this song, Sogote by Tutu. We have a dedicated affiliate station there, Anissa FM, that broadcasts to our listeners in Yambio. We have been listening to Tutu and the song Sogote, which means hatred. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer Cornelius, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.